Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series.
Well, greetings and welcome to another episode of Talk Straight. It's your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Yet again, grateful for everyone who will join us tonight in advance, for those who have joined us in the past, and for the hope that lies within. Listen to Talk Straight again, and this is your host, Reverend Dockery. Talk Straight began about going on five years now, as a national dialogue, specifically focusing on issues confronting at-risk youth, their families, and neighborhoods and communities throughout urban America. And I'm convinced that we have had very substantive dialogue, thanks to you, our listening audience, that can be shared as a teaching tool, as a reflective, and as we continue to strive to do so, we will continue to offer that to our listening audience. The number to call is 657-383-0944. You perhaps are following us on Facebook Live. That's one way. You can post your questions and or comments there. But you can also call us live in the studio tonight, in the podcast studio, by calling that number, 657-383-0944. American society is driven by capitalistic principles. The most successful citizens are those who learn how to build their own quality of life around the fundamental construct known as free enterprise. Now, in reality, beloved, it does not matter what your race is, your ethnicity, your religious identity is, your plight in life, or even your gender. If one is to operate by these aforementioned constructs or free enterprise, they can find success in America. Perhaps that's a secret to some people, but I'm sharing it. I'm letting the secret out tonight. So join me tonight as we discuss this, and I want to offer some background and some understanding of what we mean by the dollar and capitalism, right? If it does not make dollars, it does not make sense. Now, that's not sense, as in C-E-N-T, as in reasoning. And we'll go in detail to that. That's our topic tonight on this Tuesday, September. Wow. 21st. Can you believe that? Looks like I was just talking about the 1st of September, not too long ago. September 21st, 2021. You're listening to Talk Straight again, and we'll get right into our monologue, and we'll open up our phone line shortly to our listening audience to see how we might be able to engage you guys. Of course, you know, the shows are recorded on the Blog Talk Radio platform, and you can retrieve the live show. We've been operating on Tuesday and Thursday nights, typically from 7 to 9 o'clock, sometimes 8:30. And as you know, I have a business, and sometimes it requires that I pull away. So we've had the pleasure of having a guest host on, and perhaps all things work out, we may be able to hear from them a little bit more. We'll have them to come and help us out a little bit more. But nonetheless, stay with us. All right. If it doesn't make dollars, it does not make sense. The text in Timothy, 1 Timothy, 6th chapter, verses 8 through 10, but more specifically, verse 10, there is something that speaks to the idea of wealth or monetary gain. Listen to what the text says. Verse 8 says, this is 1 Timothy 6 and 8. And having food and raiment, let us be therewith content. But they that will be rich fall into temptation and a snare, and into many foolish and hurtful lusts, which drown men in destruction and perdition. Verse 10 says this, for the love of money, root of all evil, while some covet after, they have erred from the faith and pierced themselves through many sorrows. Now, that may be a contradiction here, because the topic is, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense, right? And here the text is warning us, in fact, admonishing us to be cognizant or conscious of the fact that trying to be rich or overindulging can lead you to destruction, to sorrow. It says in verse 8 that as long as you got food, right, and you got raiment, that's enough. Don't need no more. Well, let's see what the text is talking about. Let's in our conversation tonight, if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. All right? Let's get into it. I want to begin by defining, at the risk of insulting your intelligence, bear with me, please. But I want to begin by defining the dollar, or giving a little historical background on it in the context of our discussion, okay, and capitalism. Now, for some people, that's a cuss word. Capitalism is a cuss word. They don't like it. They think it's unfair and it's emblematic of injustice to some people. But let's talk about this. Now, let me tell you why we talk about this. Because for some time, at least a month or so or better, we've been really focusing on what should we teach young people in urban America who find themselves challenged academically, educationally, socially, economically. What is it that we should be teaching them? What are the lessons? And let's be clear. Instruction don't just begin in the brick and mortar of a public school building, or private, for that matter, but it begins at home. What is it that the parents, fathers, and mothers, people who have legal custody of children, what should that focus be? I commit to you tonight, one thing we should teach all of our young people, particularly those who struggle academically and economically, is to understand what the basis of the American dream and where the access to that dream is. And that's why we have this conversation tonight. If it does not make dollars for you, it does not make sense. Last week, Thursday night, I posed a question to one of our listening audience, and it was in reference to which one is more valuable, 100 pennies or a $1 bill. And interestingly enough, we had good conversation around it, but we agreed then that neither is more valuable than the other. But it's about how you use it that determines its value, its function, its worth to you, okay? And that's where we want to go tonight. So let me get back into my monologue here. The dollar. Now, from a historical perspective, just kind of give you an understanding where it came from. In the United States, the dollar began with moves by the founding fathers, who established what was called a national currency that was based largely on Spanish silver dollar. You see, now why the Spanish silver dollar? This is prior to the United States becoming formally America. Well, prior to that point, during the colonial period, what you found was that in North America and the colonies, they were using a lot of United Kingdom. They came from the United Kingdom, I should say, and for hundreds of years prior to that, before they declared America as independent, guess what? They were using the Spanish silver dollar. Okay? Now, after the United States became formally the United States, the new Congress, after, by the way, last Friday was September 17th, 1787 was the formal birth of a constitution and the nation and organization with that regards, okay? But even though it was declared independent back in 1776. So in 1792, Congress established what was called the Coinage Act, right? And what it did was to set in place a standard unit of money. And basically, the U.S. Mint was tasked to produce and circulate coinage, these coins. Now, initially, it was defined under the bimetallic standards in terms of a fixed quantity of silver or gold. So you see how they were using these metallic substances and what have you. Basically, though, by the 1900s, it adopted gold as the primary standard. And then later on, it eliminated gold, all links to gold in 1971. So that was a progression over time. But since that time, what's known now as the Federal Reserve System, which was established in around 1913, well, this system acts as the central bank within the United States, right? And the dollar has been primarily used in the form of a Federal Reserve note. And this Federal Reserve note specific to the United States is recognized all over the world in terms of making exchanges, unit of payment. Your dollar bill, that's what that is. Your $5 bill, your $10, your $20, your $50, your $100. Your $2 bill, that's what that is. Now, if somebody gives you a $3 bill, don't take it. That's fake money. But I kind of give you a little background. So the dollar is really, and it's not necessarily a tangible thing, but it's a note that suggests that you have something that is worth people engaging with you. When you go to the grocery store, when you go to the supermarket or to Walmart or some other place, when you go to the clothing store, when you go pay your bills, your electric bill, your water bill. You understand? You go in there with some money. Now, most of us don't carry a bunch of cash or coins around with us anymore. We have now plastic money, as they call it, credit cards, see? But they all represent the value of the dollar. Are you with me? Don't make dollars what you do every day in your life, what you strive toward, how you manage your 24 hours of a day. If it don't make dollars, beloved, don't make sense. I'll tell you why. Now, this is going to get into the part that particularly a lot of young folk that I've talked with engage in. Sadly, some older folk, people have been around here long enough to know better than that. Hear them talking it too. And I say this with all love, and this is an academic conversation that we're talking about. Now, we kind of understand where the dollar came from, right? And we kind of understand how it evolved to different ways you use your money now. People use their cell phones now, cash apps and things of that nature. But it still represents the value of the dollar. All right? Now, capitalism. Capitalism. Capital has to do with, well, let's look at it. Capital has to do with economics. Okay? And when we talk about capitalism, belief or practice in it, or use of it practically, it is an economic system which has it such that there is private ownership of the means of production. Let me stop right there. There's private ownership in how you produce for yourself. The government does not control that. No one else controls that but you when you participate in this economic system called capitalism. And yes, America is a capitalist society. Some people don't like that. I understand. Let's understand really what it is. All right? So it provides the opportunity for private ownership, right, as your means of production. And it's built on the concept, additionally, of private property, things that you own, profit motive, what drives your production, and competition within the market, in the free market, okay? When we talk about American capitalism, what we're speaking of largely is a free market system where businesses are in private hands. In fact, I think over 90-some% of the businesses in America are small businesses. Small business. And, of course, you know they suffered during COVID, during 2020. Many of them, I know people right now who were not able to come back. And some of them are not sure if they're going to even try to start and open another business. But nonetheless, over 97% of the businesses in America are small business. People who have worked hard and participated in the system of economics, free enterprise in America, and they control their means of production. And because they control that, they're able to control their individual qualities of life, where they live, what kind of clothes they wear, what kind of car they drive, what their children are exposed to. They're even able to control to what extent they believe or worship. You understand what I'm saying? They can determine whether or not they work every day or not based on their production, past production, right, and their ownership of things. I'm trying to get you to understand. Now, some people say, well, that's not fair because they're the rich, and the rich people get over on everybody else. I understand in America that there have been individuals that go back to the early 1900s, late 1800s, people like Carnegie and people like Rockefeller, people like Morgan and folk like that, right, who had a lot of money. And at one point in time, historically, they were in a position to help bail the nation out, right? Over time, people have seen those folks as those who are oppressing the little man. But in reality, there are opportunities for everybody, especially in 2021. Young folks, African American, Caucasian, Asian, Hispanic, whomever you are, there are opportunities in the capitalist system of America if you avail yourself to them. Okay? And what we don't want to do to our young people is to cause them to always be perpetually angry and looking for an enemy, a boogerman, and suggesting to them that something or somebody is taking them away from something, stopping them from having something. It is counterproductive, beloved, even if you are of an age where you struggled in life, right? And you had some hard times, some setbacks economically. You've had to literally work from the sweat of your brow. I get that. But that is not necessarily, it does not, I should say, it does not have to be the case for young people. Which is one of the reasons we put a value on education, teaching and learning that involves self-sufficiency and independence. Being in a position through your learning to compete in society for various positions and ownership of industries. You see, that's what we ought to teach our young people. Not that you ought to go out and burn and tear something down and you ought to hate on those who have built something for themselves, but that there is plenty, plenty of room for you to build something for yourself and to maintain it. And watch this. Once you do that, you have a right to defend it. A right to defend it. So this notion that, and don't get me wrong, I'm aware of many of the missteps and some of the problems that America has had and the challenges that Americans have had in particular through Jim Crow and things of that nature and segregation and so forth and so on. I want you to understand that I'm aware of that. However, I'm also saying that despite of that, today you're in a position to make something for yourself and have what you want. That's what I'm saying today. It's not impossible for you to do that. Now, if a race has started and you got in the race late, you're going to have to run a little bit faster to catch up with everybody else that started out at the beginning of the race. And perhaps you won't catch up in time enough. That race will be over before you make it to the finish line. But you were in the race. And guess what? There's an opportunity for you to learn something. It don't kill you, it'll make you stronger. Guess what you learn? One of the first things you all learn is, doggone it, I'm going to get there before time for the next race. Huh? And I build myself in endurance and reputation to run in a race. I know I can compete. I'm going to make doggone sure I'm there before time. Did you notice I didn't say on time? No, I'm going to be there before time. So that's the best way you can control your circumstance. That's certainly the lesson I taught my children. If you're there at the time designated, and you're just getting that in, you're late. Oftentimes, critical decisions have been made already in your absence. So you have little opportunity to offer any input in decisions that are coming down the pike. Are you with me? So make it a habit to be there before time. Folks have to say, well, you're a little too early. Wait, you will have to wait. Well, at least you can see who else is in there. You understand? Yeah, I'll get what I'm saying. My point is that there is an opportunity for you to benefit from the constructs of free enterprise, right? And that is a part of the greater capitalist system in America. It's not going to come to you. You have to go to it. Let me repeat that. Resources, economic opportunities, and the position of economic independence is not going to come to you. You have to get up, take steps and actions to go get it. Are y'all with me? It's not coming to you. No. And guess what? It's not necessarily something that comes without you making some sacrifice. They don't need me lying to you. Let me tell you the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Yeah, you're going to have to work. May have to cry sometimes. You may miss out on some social activities and hanging out with your friends and being able to just lay back and chill and watch games. And guess what, though? In the end, your independence is worth it. Say that again, Doctor. I said, in the end, your independence is worth it. The independence of your children and your grandchildren that they can benefit from is worth it. You might recall maybe a few years ago, we had a show that we talked about immigration and how before Negroes or blacks or African Americans were in what's called urban America now, in these areas, geographic areas, they were inhabited by poor Europeans in places like Italy, from Germany and Portugal and Spain, were folk that didn't have nothing, right? But they came over here and they scuttlebutt and worked their tails off. And what you see them with now is a result of things that have been passed down by through several generations. And they broke the cycle of poverty. You can do it too. That's what we're teaching. And if it don't make dollars, then it just don't make nobody sense. Huh? That's what I want you to I want young folks to be able to make a living for themselves, to create something for themselves. And you can always look back and be happy and say, look what I've done. There's nothing wrong with that. Now, we read in the text at the beginning of the show, the monologue, where 1 Timothy 6 and 8, suggest 8 through 10, suggests that the love of money can get you messed up and cause you to go astray. Didn't say you all not have money. And didn't say there was anything wrong with having money or making money. But when you allow your money to own you, that's where the problem comes in. Let me say that again. When your money owns you, you got a problem. You don't own your money. Likewise, it's a problem when you have to work for your money all the time and your money's not working for you. Uh-oh. Catch that. Ultimately, young man full of energy, vitality, creativity, yes, you should work hard to make your money. And at some point, that money you made ought to be able to work for you. I ain't gonna even charge you for that. They ain't gonna charge you for that. OJs talked about the love of money. Let's see what they say. 657-383-0944. That's the number to call. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Baffley. We're talking from the topic, if it doesn't make dollars, it doesn't make sense. Talk Straight, and our music ain't coming in right. That's all right, though. 657-383-0944. That's the number. Call. Give us a call here. We'd love to have you join us here in this discussion tonight. If it don't make dollars, don't make sense. That's not sense as in C S-E-N-T-S, but S-E-N-S-E, sense. Common sense. Welcome, caller from St. Louis area, 4600, to talk straight.
What did you say, Reuben? What are you doing, disc jockeying tonight?
Well, not quite. We're just using some ad-libs, that's all, to help animate the point. And, the OJs did a pretty good job talking about money, you know what I'm saying? The love of money. But nonetheless, that's our topic tonight. We are talking about the fact that if you're living your life every day and you can't see where you're producing anything, it don't make sense. That's really what we're talking about. What say you today?
Well, it's I like talking about the opportunities about making money.
Okay, that's
out of the box thing. That's a good topic.
I
mean, what else is it for other than that?
Yeah.
That's what you're. Well, it's not the only thing, but the people that's rich in this country. You go back and look at those names. They didn't have it. It wasn't just a cakewalk for them.
Oh, no. Yeah.
They had ups and downs, failures.
Right.
Just like everybody else.
Right.
You had white that was from adjunct poverty and went about doing what they had to do. Westinghouse and Lockheed, Kozar, and I had to take my hat off of them because they had a lot of due diligence, foresight,
right.
They kept on pushing until they achieved what it was that they was achieving. Rockefellers, look what they done, and the Congress went after Nelson. Wanted him to reveal all his businesses too.
Okay.
I think that was wrong myself. See, I like capitalism. Capitalism basically means you do business without government interference.
Absolutely. That's exactly right, you know. And that's part of the promise of citizenship, American citizenship, right? Is that you can work freely on your own, not by the fiat of a king or a ruler or somebody like that. But, you know, you're just as important as the president of the United States in regards to that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, see, there's a separation of power between the federal government and the states. Actually, the states is what made the federal government exist.
Mm-hmm.
States got more
correct.
Power than the federal government. States
okay.
have the ability to tell the federal government no. But what you see now is because of a lack of understanding, a lack of knowledge on how civic duties are supposed to play out, people let their government just run buck wild, especially at the federal level.
Well, that's true. I'm not a constitutional scholar or anything like that, but having looked at it long enough, I can see that the Ninth Amendment enumerates power to the people and the Tenth to the states to decide for themselves what their statutes of law would be and how they would function for the citizens. Now, U.S. Constitution guarantees the basic protection and rights in the United States, but the states determine your citizenship, right? You know, all points that relative to that particular boundary that represents that state that you are a commonwealth or assembly that you're part of. So, yeah, it helps to understand that.
Yeah.
Those are things.
And birthright citizenship was not supposed to be for everybody. At the time it was written in mind, it was for slaves.
Mm-hmm.
Other words, when people that's here in this country illegally and they have a child, that child takes on the status that they have. They hear illegal, the child's illegal. It's because a child born on U.S. soil shouldn't make them a citizen. And that's what you see going on. Out in San Francisco, you got these birth hotels with Chinese set up. Chinese women come over here, United States on visa. That's about 8 months pregnant, go in them hotels, stay for a month, have that baby, and that baby is supposedly an American citizen.
I've read about that. I read about that.
That's a scheme.
Isn't that largely in just what the issue is with the DACA now, that young people, that babies that came over here, small children now, find themselves, trying to get citizenship because they figure they were born here. Well, as you pointed out, because of the status of your parents, that factored into your status and so forth.
Their parents is illegal, and parents shouldn't go leave home going to do something illegal and bring your kids with you.
Well, that in itself
is not a good thing. Then you got these politicians on both sides, the Democrats. Democrats like that because they can figure they can harvest future voters in order to stay in power.
Mm. Well,
you see that going on today with the bringing in refugees and placing them in purple states. Whereas they can be counted for apportionment, they can't vote, but a lot of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's how this stuff is played out.
Yeah, that's a good. Let me recognize a caller here from 931, 8428. You listen to Talk Straight. Our topic is, if it does not make dollars, it does not make sense. Welcome, caller. Question or comment?
No, I'm
just
calling me.
Okay, I know who that is. All right, welcome there. All right. Yeah, we've just been talking, and I explained in the monologue that my conversations have been with quite a few young folks and some old people, too. When I say old, I mean people that are old enough, they've been around long enough to understand that if you don't work, you ain't going to have nothing. Now, I understand some of our babies have never really been introduced to the concept of working. Many of them have gotten used to somebody feeding them, clothing, giving them everything that they need. And they just haven't been forced to learn the hard knocks of life, to go out there and get yourself, right? But I'm talking about some of these older folk, gentlemen, who have been around long enough to realize that, doggone it, you shouldn't be mad for what you don't have. But you allow days, hours, weeks, months to go without you developing a plan or either learning about a plan from somebody to produce for yourself. And that's really what we're talking about, is controlling your resource so you can control your life. Is anything wrong with that? Do you all see anything wrong with that? Say, Lord, you see anything wrong with that?
No, that's the formula. How you produce your son should be a studied model that people can learn from.
Okay.
I bet your kid wasn't out on the corner all night long.
No. No, he wasn't doing that.
I bet he done his studies, too.
Yes, he did. But anyone else can do that. That's the point that you're making. Here's what it comes down to, though. It comes down to the parental authority for young children in particular, valuing that and setting that construct up for early on, introducing it to them. In America, despite what has happened yesterday, there are opportunities for young people today, Gosh, I was just looking back, man. I realized I've been in Nashville now 34 years. Can you believe it? And I've told
the
story. It is. In fact, I told the story about when I first got here. Your name rang bell. You were one of the first people I heard about in the city. But I said that to say that when I came here as a young man, there were all kind of opportunities. But now I see that a lot of the jobs that are here have a tech nature to them, which requires certain skill sets that unfortunately many of the young people coming out of public schools today don't have. That requires reading, math, and logical processes. And many of them, unfortunately, just are not able to live up to it. That's something we really need to look at, because they're cheated out of an opportunity because they're ill or underprepared for the real world, if you will. What do you think about that, Pastor Ron?
I would say there is a real world, you know, that's out there, yep. And I understand that, you know, some people, you know, have different ways of going about living life. I mean, that's just the nature of the game. I think I heard someone say not long ago about the Democrats and the Republicans. They mm-hmm. have two different ways of doing that. They never mm-hmm. have been on the same accord, I don't think. I mean, again, you know, you and I have talked. And I've shared with you many times. I didn't even know who the president was, didn't care who the president was, you know, and that's just the way it was with me. That was my come up. And so why would I give it all that energy when I know good and well that I don't know him, I don't know what he's doing, and so I didn't give it no energy. And then during that time when you say you came into Nashville, you said you heard about my name. And, you know, you didn't physically have no knowledge of, you know, you was going to run into me and I was going to run into you and we were going to come together, you know, like this. But let me share something with you. I wasn't the person that had that college-oriented way of going to school and all those things. But there's a song by the OJs.
What it
says, you may have a good job and go on to college, but you can't graduate yet until you get some of that real street knowledge. See, a lot of people haven't got that. I'm not talking about street knowledge. I'm talking about that real street knowledge.
Real.
That means that you understand the difference between the two, and you're not going to belittle no one who missed it. Because my thing, I would love to say, man, I'm so glad that people didn't get a chance to deal with that street life, you know. And that's where I would go with that. And I wouldn't say, well, since you didn't get none of that street life, come on out here and get you some of that street life. No, I would not say that, you know. But I would be able to say, I'm glad that a lot of people didn't get into that street life because they may not have been able to handle it. Some people was able to handle it. Some people accepted it. Some people dealt with it. And then some of them changed their lives through the process, you see. So things happen like that. Everybody's not going to take the same route in life.
Mm-hmm.
But it does not exclude you from sharing your experience. You know, so that's what experiences is all about. You share your experience, and someone may want to go that route. You never know. And then some will say, no, I don't want to go that route right there because I don't see no concern. I don't see nobody humble over here. So let me just try to do the best I can where I'm at, you know. But I like the compassion about it, man. You know, it's plenty of compassion that's available. And I was just glad that I was able to get some of it, man, because had I not got the compassion, I don't know what I would have been doing. Without that,
right.
Somebody had compassion on me, man.
Okay. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Well, you know, I was just speaking with one of my agent producers today, and we were talking about how everything is on a cell phone now. You know, you can literally go to the airport and prove that you have a ticket to get on a plane with your phone. You can download it. You understand what I'm saying? And I'm not crazy about that, St. Louis. I'm not so crazy about that because I've been with Sprint since 2003, right? And recently Sprint was bought out by T-Mobile. They told me, well, you're going to have to come in and change your SIM card out or you won't be able to use your phone. I did it, St. Louis. And guess what? My phone's still cutting up. So I said, well, look, man, what do I get for being a loyal customer with Sprint? All he said, well, that was Sprint. We T-Mobile. Oh, okay. But people's lives are literally locked up in their phones and these gadgets and things of that nature. And I understand it. And I use them because I use them for business purposes. But I get it, St. Louis. At the same time,
well, if you've been in Nashville 34 years,
30.
A whole lot of taters have been peeled in that time.
Say what? Well, you know, though, St. Louis, really, they call Nashville the It City now. And I was just laughing at my wife where she talked about everybody's talking about hot chicken. Nashville is the hot chicken capital. She said, no, Pastor Wilder, Nashville is just a little country bumping town. They ain't all that. But I realized things have really changed significantly since when I first came here.
Mm-hmm.
And but you got to keep up with the changes. You got to keep up with the changes, you know, or you get left behind one way or the other, one way or the other. I would imagine things have changed in St. Louis area from what they were, you know, a generation ago.
St. Louis all but don't disappear.
What? Why do you say that? Why do you say that?
It's nothing but a wasteland in some areas.
Okay. And St. Louis, when you think about that, how does that line up with the challenges for young folk in St. Louis? We know that that's one of the areas where we've seen a lot of things in the news where economic stress and, you know, poverty and things of that nature. Given what you're saying, is there any hope of bringing promise back to St. Louis for the young that are there now?
Well, the private entities would have to do it. The government can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
And private entities are not going to do it if you don't have a population base that's educated for one thing. You have one company, and I can't think of the name of it. And they were going to expand in St. Louis, and they said no. They're going to South Carolina.
Interesting. Okay.
And this decision was made because the owner wife rode the Metrolink, and I think she was harassed or bugged or something.
Is that right? Wow.
And it was a $2 billion expansion.
Mm.
I can't think of the name of the company. So it's just it's this stuff like that that makes it bad for everything. You know, blacks used to be on the north side of the city. Now, some years ago, they came up with these programs called First-Time Homeowners Program, where they would pay the down payment when blacks and, I guess, anybody else moved to buy a house. Well, they was buying houses from whites that had been in South St. Louis a long time, and it was a good thing for them because they could get cash and get rid of their house quick. And
right,
that's what happened. So now the crime in South St. Louis is getting so bad, you make a person scratch their head.
Well, now, so let's talk about the people committing crime and the opportunities that await them to use the energy, the time that they use committing the crimes to be productive and participate actually in the system of free enterprise. You understand? Now, the only problem is oftentimes they're not aware. Now, some of them do that, and Pastor, you can speak to this. What some people have learned for generations is that you can create your own way of making money through what's known as illegal means, right? Through the drug trade and things of that nature. And I'll say I've met some pretty good people underneath all that, and they would tell you that, hey, I'm just doing this is the quickest way and best way I know how to make my money, right? They don't, even though harm is done, and that's what I love about Pastor Wallen, his book and his ministry, is that he's trying to correct the whole harm that was done, right? But then there are some people who say, man, this is just the way I eat now. I don't know nothing else, right? I don't have anything else to do. But there is certainly a need, Pastor, for these young folk that are out here today who tend to take on what I call an anarchist mentality. In other words, we're going to just cause trouble in society. We're going to be disruptive and tear up and turn things around from the way we see them because we don't like them. But when you ask them why and what have you done to participate in the systems that are available to you, oftentimes there's a blank answer there. There's no response. So I wonder if I don't wonder that. I know that part of instruction, part of education, Pastor Waller, has to involve that orientation to understanding, first of all, the society you live in. This is not a society where every and anything comes free. Okay? That only works when you're living with your mama or your dad or your grandma or maybe your girlfriend. But it don't work when you have to get it for yourself. Huh? It just don't work like that. And if you find that the income that you have, the salary order, the wage that you have is not enough, you have to make a choice. How can I position myself to earn different or better? Now, is that a cuss word, Pastor Waller, to tell somebody what you have is not enough? Okay, it looks like we lost him. He'll call us back there. Is that a cuss word, St. Louis, to tell them, hey, you ain't got enough? Man, it already works hard, man.
Well, you know, like I told you last week, your concentration is on people who didn't make it. And okay. I concentrate on the young kids starting off in the early elementary years. Mm-hmm. Because I don't have no expertise in the ones that you target. I really don't.
Okay.
And those aren't kids that's out there doing those things. Them grown-ass adults. That's causing a lot of those problems. So my idea is to steer young people in a direction opposite away those who fail, who chose, for whatever the reason. We don't know what the reason is. We only know that it is what it is right now.
Right.
Yeah. See, it is what it is. When you take in Chicago, you don't have all of the things that's going on over there, like 2,028 blacks shot by other blacks in 111 days. In 111 days with 261 murders. That's what it is.
Okay.
Now, what would change those individuals? I don't know. I really don't. I don't know what would change them. And to be frank with you, I don't have time to work with them. My emphasis is on the other end of the spectrum. Because if emphasis had been put on those kids, then the end result possibly could it be that they wouldn't end up where these others are. And then, too, you wouldn't need all these technical immigrants coming in because they would be ready to fulfill those opportunities.
Sure. Okay. That's an interesting point. So, Pastor, one of the things that people want to know is why are all of those people coming in and taking our jobs and opportunities? St. Louis makes a very, very relevant point, and that is the positions are open. And unfortunately, those that are native have not been prepared to assume those positions, function in them. So they go out and and farm out labor from somewhere else. So, Pastor, what do you think about that? Is now what St. Louis is saying is he cannot go back and turn the hands of time around for those who are already out there. Okay, they got it hard. But he would much rather spend his resources and time on those who have a promise of avoiding those same pitfalls. What do you think about that approach, Pastor Waller?
Someone else? I'm wondering about someone else's approach?
No, I was talking about St. Louis. When he was saying that.
Yeah, I won't give that you know, because of what the Word of God said. I mean, if you put the Word of God in it, you know, it tells you to go out and get the lost. It don't tell you to go get the one that's already saved and already got things going on. So it's the Word speaks for me when it comes down to what I feel. So I don't want to know what I feel, but I will say that the Word of God does say, you know, have some passion, say, be strong, you go to the weak. You go to the strong, you gotta get no points nowhere. Because you went to ones already strong. So if you say go to the weak, I mean that means you got compassion, and you know, if you don't have compassion on folks that's in the trap, if I drive through and see somebody in the trap, I don't get that no. They already in a trap, so just let me go to see somebody who's not in a trap and let me encourage them. What good is it going to do for me to encourage them if they're not in the trap and they're already free? And so, I mean, I'm wasting their time because they already know what to do. But the person in the trap is somebody saying, why you just walk past me? You just passed on by me. You didn't show no concern, you know. And so I just can't picture myself coming from a trap, being in a trap before, and then suddenly pretend like I don't know what it's like to be in a trap. The trap is real. And,
sure.
That's where my compassion lies at. My compassion lies right there because it's an assignment of mine. It's not something that I wanted to do or that I didn't want to do. It's something that I was assigned to do. So have compassion is a big thing to me.
Okay. I wonder if there's a different perspective on it, though, Pastor, that's similar to what you're saying. For instance, let's take a newborn baby who is on the ground and a five-year-old who's on the ground. Would you agree that the five-year-old have a better chance of getting up on their own off the ground than the newborn baby without someone's help? Does that make sense, Pastor? I'm trying to make an illustration because I do see what you're saying. And there are some people, no matter what you do, they've made up in their mind, they are not interested in changing. They're not interested in changing. And I've learned that I can't change them. You know what I mean? Now, we provide them the opportunity, whosoever will let them come. But you see what I mean with that analogy of the newborn baby needing someone, depending on someone to pick it up, versus the five-year-old who has the ability to get up on their own. Where would you put your focus on, the five-year-old or the newborn baby, if that makes sense? That,
well, I've seen a set of twins. I've seen a set of twins tripping, Pastor, and they needed the bottle. And one of the little babies got the first bottle and gave it to one of the siblings.
Okay.
The same baby went and got another bottle and gave it to the other siblings. But they was on the floor. They was on the floor, as you're talking about, on the floor.
Okay.
And they laid down and accepted the bottle. And he went and got the third bottle as he was standing up, you know, couldn't hardly stand up, stood up and got the bottle and took him, made his bottle last, and he laid down on the floor with them.
Wow.
That sounded like togetherness to me. That sounded like togetherness to me. And then they cut it off. Could you imagine that little baby, they're all the same age, probably one, maybe 14 months, I don't know to the exact, but they wasn't no longer, they weren't no 3 or 4 years old. They were that, and they were still on the bottle. Took that first bottle and gave it to that baby, and I'm telling you, the baby was just content, laying on the floor. Gave the other one the bottle, and he's the third and last one, and laid on the floor with him, like, now we're all together.
That's a young people, right?
That's love.
Yeah, that's a young I like that.
That's power and that's love right there. That's the real deal. That's what I call the real deal. You know, other than that, you know, if it ain't real, it's not, man. But if it is, it is. Now, if that was real, could you imagine that little baby wasn't going at it for himself? He easily done it.
Right.
They just lazy. They're not going to get up and get that bottle. No, they took and got the bottle for him, gave it to the person, got the next bottle, gave it to the second one, and made himself last, but was content and laid right on in the floor with him. I said, look at that. Look at that.
Okay.
Great illustration, man.
Yeah.
I don't know how they did it, but it was amazing how that little baby was able to acknowledge that concern for others more than itself. You know, the word does say, we then who are strong ought to bear the infirmity of the weak and not to please ourselves.
That. Yeah, we read that last week.
You know, even Jesus himself carried it out like that. So that's where I would be with that.
You and I both share equal ability, strength, and opportunity to carry ourselves, right? And there's nothing wrong with me at all, such that I can't, but I just choose to continue to ride your back. Is there any fairness in that, Pastor? Now, of course, you could let me jump on, right? You let me ride to your back, but is that where that's fair to you? You understand what I'm saying?
Well, I understand what you're saying, and the fairness is in, you know, you don't change the word of God to fit my selfishness. You know, I'm just saying that because if that baby had to do that again, I don't know if he would have done it again. But the way he laid it down, it was like he preferred to do it again and again. The Word of God don't say, you know, how many times to do it. It just says, you know, when it's a necessary need, continue to do it until that, you know, that person realized that, okay, I can get up and do it on my own now. Sometimes it takes longer than others sometimes, and that's why I think about, you know, how many times, you know, should I forgive a person who has wronged me? You know, should I say, okay, you wronged me more than enough. Now I'm getting ready to get back at you. You know what I mean?
Right.
You know, it's the same scenario because it's like, okay, it seems like you should have got it right the first time. You know you're doing me wrong, and I know you're doing me wrong, and everybody else know you're doing me wrong, especially the one that's doing the wrong know that they're doing wrong. And still I got to come back and forgive that person again. You know, the word does say, how many times should I forgive him? Like 7 times? That's a lot.
Yeah. Well, but
7 times. He said, no, not 7 times. But how many times? I'm like, wait a minute, hold it. That's almost the rest of my life. I got to be forgiving somebody who wronged me. So that's the same difference in the person being a positive influence on somebody that is unable to apply something, maybe for whatever the reason is. And the one who's able to really just don't mind. I mean, you got them like that. I mean, I'm going to give you a good example, then I'm going to turn it back over. When I was in the streets, Pastor, I took care of everything. Don't make no difference how many times I did. Anyway, it wasn't no thing with me. I mean, that was just me. I just did it that way and enjoyed it. And whether they thought they was getting over on me or not, that wasn't the case for me. It was like, that's just how I got out. You know, that was just me. I was a giver. I mean, I was the worst, and I found out years later something that I didn't know, that is in the Word, it says more blessed to give than it is to receive. I was like, well.
Right.
So I took that,
right.
And, you know, and I just stayed. So I understand it now, even though I wasn't aware of it then, I didn't know it was in the Bible. I did not know that. But it was in my character. You know, no matter what I was doing, I still got out like that. You know, I was one that was going to take care of everything. That's just the way I did it. Even though they made it, you know, they couldn't have by that time handled it for themselves. I wish one of my partners was around. When I say I wish one of my partners was around, I could call him and things like this. You would hear him say it. They knew if we was out there playing basketball, this really actually happened.
Mm-hmm.
Out there playing basketball at the court. Of course, I got plenty of money during that time. You know,
okay.
I wasn't in school. I didn't go no further than where I went. But we got the community center playing ball, and I would have my clothes on the bleachers. The guy knew to go and get the money out of my pocket without even asking me. And you know what he would do? He would go to the store, get what he get, and then he would bring my change back. You know, he would tell people about that story now. You know what I mean? He said, I used to go in his pocket and get money and then go to the store and then come back and bring his change back and stuff like that. I mean, because they knew what kind of heart I had. I had a heart to give, so it wasn't no thing. I probably would have told him, man, go on over there and get it out of his pocket anyway and go ahead on and come on back. So it's a catch-22 to it. So that's just how I came up.
Gotcha. I wanted to add to that conversation that I appreciate what you're saying about helping those who need. That's the opposite word. But you're familiar with the text in 2 Thessalonians, 3rd chapter, where it says that if you don't work, you don't eat. Very clearly, that's making the point. That's very clearly making the point that each of us have a responsibility and a duty to ourselves. You understand what I'm saying? And so I don't mean individuals who are incapable, have infirmities, who have issues, real issues. I'm talking about individuals who choose not to just because they know you're a good guy. And I'm going to take advantage of that good guy because I know his heart is good and he's going to get, I ain't got to get better. I don't really need it. I've had people pass the tape from me, and I turn around and look, and essentially they threw what I gave them in the garbage. They didn't want it. They left the shit right there. Somebody else could have been. You understand what I'm saying? That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, sure, and, sure, because that word does say if you don't work, you don't eat. That word does say that, and that's the thing about it, about how when you have to give and your brother's in need and you have it to give and you go right on by them as if you don't care nothing about their need and say, I'm going to give it to somebody that don't need nothing, I'd rather give it to them because they're already good to go. I mean, that right there is what I was hearing earlier. And that's the reason why I said I have that way of coming up to the point where I understand now what the Bible was saying about that. You know, it's more blessed to give than it is to receive. So whether they need it or not, or whether they wanted it or not, I would do it just because that's just the way it was, without knowing about the Bible now. And then come back and find out that this person is in need. This is not a person that's able to work or to do things. This person is just in need, and in need for somebody to have, quote, compassion on them. And yet still they pass right on by you. You heard the scripture, Pastor Doctor, about how, you know, the person was laying on the road for half dead, you know, and that person rode by and went across the street because they didn't want to be affiliated with it. They passed on by, and then somebody came by, and, you know, eventually after those persons walked on by, somebody came and assist the person, and they said, if they need anything else, get with me, and I'll take care of it. So that right there is where I'm at with that kind of style.
I got you. There are two different situations now. There are two different situations. Those that are in need.
Yes.
And those who are just exploiters. Right? And they actually take from those who need. And that's what that was the point. Even Jesus himself says that you must work, I'm paraphrasing, you got to work out your own soul self with fear and trembling.
Yes. That's right. That's what the word says. That's what.
The point I'm making is when I talk about if it don't make dollars, I explain how a dollar is a symbol of wealth or resource, right?
Mm-hmm.
It represents.
Uh-huh.
And you get that wealth or resource by working and collecting and developing that. Now, if you're not doing things that position you to have something for yourself, to be able to stand on your own, it don't make sense. That goes back to the text in 2 Thessalonians. You know, you don't work, you don't eat. It don't make no sense for you to be eating nothing if you're not willing to work and produce your food.
If you got what it takes, that's it. Yeah, if you got what it takes, that fits very well. But those are people that sometimes in that situation that's willing to work but still just doesn't have it, and one that does have it, you know, still got that mentality that I'd rather give it to somebody that already has it. I mean, because that means, you probably can get it back, you know. Hey, if I give you $5, I can get it back because I gave you $5 and I know you got it and I know you're good for it anyway, so I know you're going to give it back. But this person who's willing to work but just don't have it right then, you know what I mean? And I'm not going to give it to you because you don't have it right now and you probably won't ever have it. So I can't get it back from you. And because the word does say if you don't work, you don't eat. You know what I mean? It does say that and everything. I mean, it really definitely say that. And that's what it means. Work out your own soul salvation with trembling. It does say that. That's the beauty of it. That's the beauty of it, is knowing that. And so whenever there's an opportunity to give, man, I heard him say this right here with excitement. Be excited about it whenever you see an opportunity to give. That's deep.
Well, we can cite many examples of how the word encourages people to be self-sufficient and driven. Because the text often, the Old Testament text is study to show yourself approved, a workman that need not be ashamed. Right, right? So, but my point is, here's my basic point as we move forward. What young people need in 2021, and can you believe this is already the 21st day of September, month just about gone already. We're coming to 2022. And I don't believe they should go into 2022 without somebody telling them, doggone it, you got to be ready to work for what you want. Put your work in. You got to put your work
man.
In.
Oh, man. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work that could be done. And I'm telling you, man, I'm looking at the word work. It's like, okay, I do a lot of work and don't get no money for it. A lot of work. I'm talking about this is real work. I mean, and then look, check this out. A lot of work, a whole lot of work. I'm talking about people that don't know how to do it. And, you know, and that's work. And they still don't know how to do it. It is a job to get free from drugs. That's a job. Not for the person who know how to do it, but for the person who don't know how to do it. And they would love to do it. That's work. That's work. They want to get off of it. They want to stop. Not just drugs. I'm using that for an example. As whatever their strongholds are. A lot of people don't even know how to change those things. So they're listening to good guidance and still don't know how to do it. And that's a tough situation to be in, without a doubt. So So yeah, I mean the word as you say, somebody in Thessalonians, you know, that actually means that. But could you imagine, man? I mean, people actually watching people die off of the drugs, for instance, whatever they call it, name their stuff now that people taking to hit everything they just got. Man, these people don't really want to do that. But they've been controlled, and somehow or another that stuff got out there. How did it get out there? Where did it come from? Why all of a sudden? So it's a whole lot. That's work, to be able to do harm to people. That's work. You know, and work come in, and a lot of them get paid to harm people. Yeah. I mean, that's actually work, man. Okay. I mean, it's just sad to say, you know. But they don't work to get you free or to make you enjoy yourself. They work to keep you, you know, in bondage.
Gotcha.
And some people get caught up in it, and thank God for those that didn't and had never gotten caught up in it. I thank God for them, and I wouldn't want them to even take the moment and say, let me go experience what it's like to get caught up. No, I wouldn't dare try to encourage a person to do that. But for those that are out there right now, man, just somebody's working hard to keep them out there.
Extremely. Okay. All right.
Hey, pal, and they get big money for it. Big money for
it. That's why the position here on Talk Straight is to encourage people to understand that as much as somebody is working to keep you there, no doubt about that.
Yeah.
You can do work to avoid being there.
Right.
That's where the focus ought to be. And when I talk about teaching young people, those are some of the lessons that I'm talking about teaching. Now, I was asked before, well, what about everybody, not just young people? It's other people who need help too, St. Louis, and this is where it comes in. Now, they're grown, certainly chronologically grown. I have less chance of influencing them to do anything different than what they've become accustomed to. And it is much better to catch young folks or people or children when they're young, when you have the best chance of shaping their behavior and their ideas and their actions. Even at that, they have parents. So if you're not willing to work with their parents or their caregivers, you're falling short as well. And it's not something that's easy, but what I have observed over time is a cycle and a certain orientation. Would you want to say something, Louis?
Well, when they get grown, the parents ain't going to have nothing to do with them.
A lot of times that's the case.
I would say most of the times that's the case because they want to listen to the parents coming up. They grown, 28 years old. What in the world are parents going to tell a 28-year-old to do? Then here's the other problem. What you talking about doing costs money. There's limited resources.
Mm-hmm.
Those resources should be spent down at the other end with those children.
Okay.
Where does he bring up a child so slowly? So you got limited resources. You don't have resources to be spending on them adults. They adults. They're supposed to be able to go out and get it on their own. A child can't do that. They're a child. So the resources that's provided by allocation for children, that's what it should be spending on the children.
Okay. Here's the thing. I'm gonna personalize this to me now. If I miss my opportunity, I could do one or two things. I could just throw my hands up and quit altogether and never take another stab at it again. Or I can learn from that experience and say, man, doctor, why did you miss on that? Where did you go wrong? What could you do differently? And how could you benefit better in the future? You see what I mean? And I believe that that's – sometimes people look at a gentleman as an indictment when you cause them to reflect on themselves, even when it don't look good. When they don't look good, they see that as an indictment. No, look at it as self-improvement. You understand what I'm saying? If you got a problem, you want to fix it. And you can't start fixing
it. They got an alternative school in St. Louis at Sumner High School. Probably got 24 students in it. You're supposed to graduate at 18.
Uh-huh.
All right. Those that didn't graduate, they came up with this program for alternative schools for those who didn't graduate at 18 can come back and earn a GED. But that program is only good until you get up to about 21.
Ah, okay.
So when you're 21, you out on the streets. You grown. The government can't make you come to school when you're grown.
No, no.
They can't punish parents for you not being at school when you're grown.
Okay.
And most parents want to hurry up and get you out the house anyway. They sure ain't going to be feeding and providing food and shelter for no grown person.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, St. Louis, the governor here in Tennessee, he did something that I thought was really good. He came up with a program for work development opportunity for individuals who dropped out of high school, right, and who has not gained any technical skills, such that they can go back. They can go back, even if you pass 21, go back and get certification and get training and enter into the workforce. I thought that was a pretty novel thing. Now, here's the deal, though. You get, like you were saying, you have to, there's a process, and part of it involves you finishing your high school diploma in addition to getting the skills training or what have you. But it positions you to where, you know, even though you missed high school, you dropped out of high school, right? And even individuals who have had some criminal record, it depends on the degree. If you had a major felony, you may not qualify. But if you had lesser offenses or lighter felonies, you can, in many cases, you can still qualify for them and get your record expunged. You see what I mean?
That's interesting.
So that was
How many people in prison? How many people in U.S. prisons? How many blacks in U.S. prisons?
It's a lot. I don't remember the specific number right now. I have it on the top.
400,000, 500,000, 600,000, 700,000, 800,000. How many do you think it is?
I know that.
It's over 800,000.
Okay. All right. I'll take
a quick. That's bigger than the city of Chicago, Detroit. You took every man, woman, and child in Detroit, that's bigger than what that look like.
And what's you're making that point to say what exactly?
I'm making that point because you never have alternatives that's going to go up against the real thing. It ain't going to happen. You're going to have 800,000 in prison. You're going to have alternatives that's going to address maybe 24. That's just the way it is. That's why it's best to put your efforts, unless you're merciful, it's best to put your efforts with the young children. That way they don't end up with that.
You know what I'm saying? I'm going to tell you something. And I know this for me personally. The best thing that happened to me was when my principal grabbed me in the collar and took me off the ground with his hand and put me up against the wall and gave me a few choice words. That resonated with my little behind. You understand what I'm saying? So I happen to know that some of my little brothers and some of my sisters just need somebody to show them some tough love and redirect them. So
yeah,
that,
and he did it with how many hands? One hand.
One hand. One hand, man.
Well, you ain't going to pick no adult up with no one hand.
I mean, when I was, well, how old was I? I was a teenager preteen. About big boy, you know what I mean?
Hey, Pastor.
Yes, sir.
You were so young, they picked you up. But you know, when you talk about how many people is in prison that's black,
mm-hmm.
You think about the drugs. How did the drugs get out there to cause them to go to prison? Because without no drugs, they never would have been in prison, possibly. You got to look at the scenario. What caused? There's a reason for the season. There's a reason for everything. What was the reason for innocent kids who were playing in the yard, little kids, without a care in the world, suddenly they can pick up a drug? Interesting. You know, kids are kind of curious, and that happens like that, you know. And if you put on a scale of how many that it happened to, it'll probably be pretty high. I'm not saying it weird. It probably would be pretty high.
It probably would be pretty high.
You know what I mean? And that's the thing about it, because it happened. Not only does it happen, it did happen. It's still happening.
Right.
And
right.
There is power
mm-hmm.
in the kingdom of darkness. There is power in it, you know. So if a kid don't know, and whom better to get a hold to than a kid? That's curious.
Well, you know,
they have no protection. Who's better to get them? Who is the Bible says that the enemy don't go around like a roaring lion to deceive people who are grown.
Right.
He says going to deceive who he may devour. I'm just talking about an individual that I know about. I'm not talking about one that I don't know about. I'm talking about the one that I know about. That's a personal thing. I'm not saying anything against nobody else, but I do know somebody that happened to. Yes, I do.
You know,
and I mean, person don't have no excuse. That person just know that was none of my plan.
Yeah,
that was not my plan, but it still happened. And I know it's probably many more like that. Probably real high.
Hold on one second. Let me say this, St. Louis. You know something? I know what you're talking about, Pastor, because at 10 years old, that was the first time I saw a man get shot over a dice game in the project. First time I saw a man get killed over a dice game. You understand what I'm saying? So, yes, these vices, negative examples are out there, and they have an impact. No doubt about it. No doubt about it at all. No doubt about it. Go ahead. What were we going to say, St. Louis?
Well, I was going to say it. At that older age, your sponge is saturated. It ain't going to soak up no water. But that young age kid, this sponge is still dry. It's going to soak up a lot.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
It's able to compute. It's able to apprehend, understand. When you get older, you lose them qualities. Your brain stops having that acuteness when you get 25 years of age. So scientists say. Your benefits, if you're going to bet, if you're going to bet on a horse, I bet on that 3-year-old horse.
Okay.
Because once they get beyond that, they put them out to pasture.
Okay. Well, listen, gentlemen, we're going to wrap up in about 5 minutes here tonight. But I wanted to emphasize.
Where's everybody else at?
I guess doing their thing. Oh, by the way, let me just say that Peoria, her sister passed. Another of her sister passed. I'm not sure the circumstances, but they're probably planning her funeral service now in Peoria. So if y'all could just give her your best thoughts and wishes. This is about the third of her relatives in the last couple of years. They're ailing. Most of them are up in age and they're ailing. So, but just keep on your thoughts there. Your prayers.
Yeah, my condolences, you know, on that.
Absolutely. I promise you I will check back with her again, but I spoke with her the other day, and she did let me know. First she was ill, and then she passed the other day. So, with that being said, as we wrap up the conversation tonight, I want to make it very clear that my position is to take those who are willing to improve and show you how. I'm not going to do it for you, but I'll be happy to show you how to do it yourself if you want to. That's where it is. So, St. Louis, you were going to say something, and then we'll let you.
Well, I hate to hear about the lady losing her sister.
Yeah.
After having had the same experience not too long ago.
Oh well, sorry to hear that. Wow. Okay.
No, not me. Yeah. She did.
She did. Last year, as a matter of fact, last year she lost a sibling. There was a brother last year that she lost. So,
she lost some loved ones. So I hate to hear of that. And we hope everything works out.
Yeah, me too. I certainly do. Kind of rough, but, you know, there's a lot of people are moving on. A lot of people are moving on here, man. And we, those of us that are left behind, got to do what we can to take care of us.
So. No, when death knocks at the door, you can put the couch up against the door and ward it off just a little bit, but not forever.
Yeah. The writer says time is appointed for man to die. And after that comes the judgment. Yeah, Job said that if you're born of a woman, I don't know who's not, you only have a few days and you're full of trouble. Yes, so we might as well get ready. Right down. One of these days. Give a count. So. But all right, final thought there, St. Louis, and then we'll get on out of here first.
Well, my final thoughts is people have ambitions and dreams that need to work best as they possibly can to fulfill and live them.
Okay.
Now is no better time than ever.
That is a great thought. If no other time, now for sure. All right. Well, we appreciate you, sir. Appreciate you joining us there.
Thank you.
We'll be back Thursday night for another episode.
Yeah. Thank you, Wallace. See you later.
All right.
Take care of yourself, St. Louis.
All right, Pastor, go ahead and wrap us up for tonight, yes, sir.
Oh, yeah, man. We just going to make sure we just continue to put the word out there and let it be known that his word is real and it's true. He said in the book of, I would say, Matthew chapter 6 and verse 33, I love that scripture where it says, seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things shall be added unto you. So you just keep up the good work and keep on doing what you're doing, Pastor Doc, because the best is yet to be seen and yet to come. So God is going to be the one that's going to make it happen. Keep leaning and depending upon him and watch him do for you what you're unable to do for yourself. I yield back to you on that note.
We appreciate you, sir. Thanks for sitting in there with us. And you've been listening to Talk Straight, as Pastor Wallace said, and we talked from the topic, if it don't make dollars, it don't make sense. But Thursday night, we'll be back for another episode of Talk Straight. On behalf of our co-host, Pastor Ricky Waller, we thank you and look forward to engage you later on.
Well, son, I tell you, life for me ain't been no crystal stair. It's had tacks in it and splinters and boards torn up and places with no carpet on the floor bare. But all the time I's been a-climbing on and reaching laddens and turning corners, sometimes going in the dark where there ain't been no light. So boy, don't you turn back. Don't you set on the steps, 'cause you find it's kinda hard. Don't you fall now, for I still going, honey. I still climbing, and life for me ain't been no crystal stair.